5 miles away on the flatland above the canyon, J.T. Priest stopped his horse at the crest of a low rise and looked back through the morning light. They'd heard the beginning of the gun battle 4 miles earlier, but they hadn't even slowed down.
What do you figure, Mac? Federales, maybe?
I don't know, boss, but I feel bad as hell leaving everybody on foot.
You'll get over that once you run your fingers through $700,000, Mac.
Priest scanned the flatland, and he caught sight of a thin streak of sunlight reflecting off metal.
We got somebody on our tails. Sims, did you come alone?
What do you think, JT?
Yeah, he always works alone. None of the deputies will work with him, I expect. We're gonna have to find a spot where we can get covered.
But what if it's some of our men, boss?
So what? You want to face any of our bunch after scattering their horses on them, leaving them in a gunfight? Are you sure you're smart enough to handle a large amount of money?
All I'm saying is
I won't be dogged from here to the border, whoever that is. Ride forward and find us a spot, Mac. Take the lovebirds with you. I'll wait here till I can make out who it is.
Priest jerked his horse toward a shallow dry wash in the sand in Choya.
Why can't things just go simple for once?
Rance Mecklenburg slapped the big chestnut barb on its rump and raced forward behind it. They rode hard for almost 2 miles before Sims finally checked the chestnut barb down and turned it, facing Rance Mecklenburg in a low swirl of dust.
Keep riding, damn you!
All right, but how much farther are we gonna go before your boss back there thinks we've run out on him?
Well, he knows better.
Are you kidding me? J.T. Priest is walking on fire right now. He wouldn't trust his own mother, if he ever had one.
Sims stepped the chestnut barb closer to Mecklenburg until the rifle came up from the man's lap and leveled on him.
That's close enough, Quick Charlie. I know you got more angles than a bag of broken glass. Now you figure you'll slip in between me and Priest and get us again one another. Don't even try it.
I won't. But unless you're as stupid as he thinks you are, you should realize Kate and me are trying to get through this thing alive. I don't want Priest going nuts on us, come charging at us thinking we've tried to double-cross him. You've seen how easily that can happen with him. He's just dangling on thin strings anyway.
Get moving!
Mecklenburg jerked his head toward a higher rise in the sand 1,000 yards ahead of him.
Well, hold up there. It's good cover.
Whatever you say.
They rode on in silence until at the bottom of the rise, Mecklenburg pulled his horse up beside the chestnut barb and grabbed its reins again.
What did you mean back there? As stupid as he thinks I am.
Oh, hey, forget it, Mac. It's none of my business which one of you kills the other.
Sims and Kate McCorkle swung down from the horse and waited, while Rance Mecklenburg turned his back on him and looked over the edge back along the trail. Kate gave Sims a look and patted her cuffed hands on the razor up under her arm. But Sims quickly shook his head, stopping her.
Don't try nothing. I'm warning you.
Hadn't given it a thought, Mac.
And don't call me Mac. Only my friends call me Mac.
All right, Rance. Anything you say.
For the next few minutes, Mecklenburg shot glances away from Sims and Kate only long enough to check the trail. Then his eyes would snap back to him.
We're not the ones you have to worry about, Rance. You can see us. You know what our intentions are.
Shut up, damn you, and don't call me Rance either.
Well, then what do I call?
You don't call me nothing. You just sit there and shut your mouth or I'll put a bullet in your eye.
Oh, boy, wouldn't that make Priest proud of you? The one person who can put your hands on the money, you shoot him in the eye.
Here it comes.
Mecklenburg's eyes took on a strange expression as he watched Priest appear up above the sand in Choya, along with 2 other horsemen.
What's this? He's not alone. Howlin' Joe Terrier riding with him.
Let me cut him now, Charlie. We can make a break for it.
What, miss all this? Stay with me, Kate. We're gaining ground every minute.
Seeing the look on Rance Mecklenburg's face, Priest drew his horse to a halt, Denton Howell and Joe Cherry right behind him.
Luckily, they made it, Mac. I told you I'd better wait back there, make sure it was Howell and Cherry and bring them to us. Good thing I insisted on it. It's a damn wonder they got out of there alive, thank God.
Yep, thank God. Boys, I was on my way back to warn you somebody had turned the horses loose, but the boss, he stopped me.
Macklenburg gave Priest a cold stare, letting him know the two could play this game.
What the hell's going on back there anyway? Federales?
What went on is I tracked wide and slipped in sideways up that dry wash. Caught Priest with his britches down, so to speak.
Priest swung down from his saddle and squatted down on the ground, mopping a nervous hand across his brow.
That's the damn truth, Mac. There I stood waiting for him, worried to death about him. Damned if Joe didn't slip right up and...
All's well that ends well.
Howell's eyes went to Sims and McCorkle.
Howdy, Sims. I might have figured you played into this some way.
Howdy, Howell. I'm not at all played into this. I'm what you call the innocent bystander.
Oh, you just dropped down out of the sky? You know, she'd be a half-decent-looking woman if she'd do something with that hair, clean herself up some. But damned if I'd put it all on the line for her. Is she really worth all this?
Denton, old buddy, you just can't imagine. But realize this. Neither Kate nor me asked for any of this. This wasn't my idea, calling a war on Los Pistoleros.
Relax, Sims. I never had anything against you. Never liked you after you went in my grandfather's pocket watch that time, but never really disliked you either. I don't blame you for what's going on back there. For 2 cents, we'd all ride back there and take our medicine with them.
J.T. Priest looked at the ground, a feigned sadness coming to his eyes.
Denton, you don't know how much I've had to fight myself to keep from doing that very thing. If I thought I could change anything, I'd be in there like a dart. But the cold, hard truth is, those boys are done for, from what it sounded like to me. The best we can hope to do now is to go on. It's what they would have wanted.
JT, you sound like P.T. Barnum selling rain to a river rat. Well, are we ready to go?
Go where?
To the Birdeen Spread, of course, to see if Quick Charlie is really that good at opening a safe.
Priest stood up, swallowing a knot in his dry throat. There was nothing he could say that would make things any better. He wasn't even going to try. Dusting off the seat of his trousers, Priest picked up his reins.
JT, why don't you and Mac there ride double for a while? Give Sims' horse a little break.
When the next heavy round of firing ended, Pete Lambertus raised his head briefly, looking back and forth, getting his bearings. Next to him lay Lewis Pryor and Tommy Kendall.
Once Coke shoots his rifle empty this next time, we make our run at him. Sounds like he's loading 10 shots at a time.
Why only 10? That model of rifle fires 15 shots.
I don't know, Pryor. Maybe you can write to the manufacturer once we get out of here. The point is, Coke's doing most of the damage. The other shooter's mostly pinning us down while Coke reloads.
Harry Turpin rose up from the ground in front of them and made a run for the shack.
Yeah, well, he sure pinned Turpin, if that's what you're talking about.
Damn it, if this keeps up, there'll soon be too few of us to rush him.
Then let's get it done.
Up in the rocks and brush above them, Jake Coke finished reloading his rifle and resumed firing. The idea being to wear the men down and force them to make a bold rush on his position. If he was right in his assessment of the matter, the gunmen were just about ready to try. His main concern right now was a figure in the brush that he had shot at earlier. Coke wasn't sure if he'd hit the man or not, and he didn't like thinking that the man was still alive and might make a move on him at the same time as the others rushed him. Coke glanced around for Buster, but he saw no sign of him. Then, seeing another man rise up from behind a saddle on the ground and make a run for the shack, Coke aimed at the dirt behind his running boots. The man dove through the door of the adobe shack.
Good. Let them see you miss.
He looked on in satisfaction, hoping that the others would see him miss, take heart, and decide it was time to make their charge at him.
He's down to 3 shots. Get ready to signal the men. I'll keep the other rifle busy.
Pete Lambertus aimed at where he had seen Bob Hearns' rifle smoke. Lewis Pryor waved a hand toward the opposite side of the hill. Then Pryor and Tommy Kendall bolted forward. Pete looked toward the men in the shack.
Help them, damn it to hell!
By the time Lewis Pryor and Tommy Kendall had crossed the clearing, Max Shepard, Dean Spence, and Eli Drake had joined them. They charged the hillside, pistols and rifles exploding. From the door of the adobe shack came Buddy Raines and Little Bit Collie. Raines fell, obliterated by the sawed-off. Dean Spence was next. Even with Lambertus firing on him, Bob Hearns got off 2 quick shots, one going wild, but the other nailing Little Bit Collier in the back. Coke swung his rifle toward the advancing men and started to squeeze off a shot at Eli Drake. But before Coke got the shot off, he saw the figure rise up and spring forward from 15 feet, the man he had missed earlier. Buck Dahoney charged in across the rocky ground. A bullet hit Coke low on his left side, causing him to jerk forward. As he straightened up in pain and went for the shot, he saw the pistol barrel pointed in his face less than 8 feet away now. Buster burst from the brush. Coke had no time to see the outcome of the struggle between man and dog. His rifle was empty and he had no time to reload. Instead, he snatched the pistol from his waist. Coke swung toward Buster, seeing a knife in the dog's side planted there by Dahoney. Buster tried to move away, but his wounds were too severe. Buster sank beneath Buck Dahoney's dead weight, at the same time as Jake Coke slumped forward on the ground.
Good boy.
Bob Hearns still had his hands full. He moved down fast, stumbling over rocks to get across the clearing toward where most of the men had charged Coke's position. Something had gone wrong. Hearns saw Pete Lambertus stagger back and forth in front of him. Lambertus's pistol was up. A bullet grazed Hearns' shoulder. He pressed forward, leveling his pistol. Both men fired one last shot. And both men went down. Hearns crawled forward, feeling nothing from his waist down. He crawled past the lifeless body of Pete Lambertus.
Jake! Jake! We got him. Got them all.
J.T. Priest and Rance Macklenburg doubled the rest of the day. Denton Howell and Joe Cherry cautiously staying a few yards back, keeping a close eye on Sims and Kate. They made camp that night, and after coffee, Joe Cherry moved off to one side of the camp with a rifle across his lap. In the closing darkness, Sims watched Cherry raise the leather bag from around his neck and take out a pinch of the brown powder.
Oh, shit.
After tying Kate and Sims to a nearby tree, the men wrapped up in their blankets. Kate waited until she felt sure that they must all be asleep.
Charlie, what do you know about Denton Howell?
That stud poker, he was always steady as a rock. Never seen him let too much rattle in. The only way to beat him was to outlast him. That's how I won his grandfather's watch. I let him win some small pots one after another. Finally had to wait for one big hand, and then kick the betting up slowly. Now, he played the odds against me having another king in the hole to go with the 2 already showing. And by the time we got through betting, the pot was up to 4,000 and he was short of cash. Now, he couldn't turn loose. So I let him play the pocket watch.
Oh, I mean, what do you know about the kind of man he is?
And that's what I've been trying to tell you. He's hard to beat, but I've beaten him before.
Yes, at poker.
This is no different. We've got to get a player out of the game. The sides are too even right now. That's dangerous. The way things are now, these boys could blow up and start killing one another. And we don't want to be caught between them.
Who do you say?
No, Joe Cherry. No question about it.
I'll have to do it.
No, Kate, stay out of it. It's too risky.
But how will you get rid of them? They're all watching you like a hawk.
I don't know, Kate. But I'm working on it.
At dawn, they were up and back into their saddles. Priest and Macklenburg still riding double, Howell and Cherry once again holding the ropes in their gloved hands. They stopped long enough at noon to water their horses at a thin runoff behind a jagged slope and stand of rocky hillside. Kate saw Joe Cherry take a snort of his brown powder.
Oh, mama!
He sank back against his horse for a moment. Kate shot Sims a sharp glance, then turned to Howell.
I gotta go out behind the bushes.
Not now, you don't. You can go the next time we stop. We'll be close to the border tonight.
No, I can't wait that long. What's the border gotta do with it? I gotta go right now.
I'll take her if it'll shut her up.
Quick Charlie Sims stood watching, knowing that Kate was up to something, but unable to stop her.
Go on, then. And hurry up about it.
Rance Macklenburg grabbed Kate by her handcuffs and pulled her forward.
On second thought, Mac, maybe you best let Cherry here take her to do her business.
Me? Why me? I got better things to do than watch her pee in the dirt.
Go on, Joe. Don't give me any lip about it. That powder's got you acting like your wheels have slipped the track. Whatever you got left in that bag, you best use it up today. Tomorrow, you're going on a long dry spell without it.
Sam stood waiting almost breathlessly as Kate and Joe Cherry climbed up the hillside out of sight.
You ought to see your face, Sims. Oh, don't worry. Joe Cherry won't bother her unless she makes a run for it. His only interest is powder right now.
Sims only nodded and looked away. But he could not stand easy until Kate and Joe Cherry reappeared and started walking back down the hillside. Once they were back on the trail, even with the rope around his neck, Sims managed to let his horse drift close enough to Kate.
Kate, I see what you're up to. Don't do it.
It's the only way, Charlie, and you know it.
Quick Charlie Sims just stared straight ahead, unable to argue with her. Kate was right, and all he could do was prepare himself for what was going to happen. At the end of the day, when they'd ridden off the rolling flatland and made camp along a narrow creek amid high-reaching rock formations, Kate dipped the coffee pot into the creek with her cuffed hands, walked back to the fire, and then sat the pot over the low flames.
Look at this. There's unshod hoof prints everywhere.
We saw them. They're Apache. But they're a couple of days old and headed the opposite direction. Whatever's left of the men back there, the Apache will most likely finish off. That's one more thing you can be real sad about, JT.
Well, maybe Apache don't worry you, Howell. But I've got to go to the bushes again. And I'm afraid.
Bull. Unless I miss my guess, you've never been afraid of anything, Kate McCorkle.
Howell turned to Joe Cherry, seeing the streak of ever-present brown powder beneath both nostrils.
Joe? Oh, God damn it. Take her out there.
He's too crazy. I'll just wait.
Just wait till when? We're heading out as soon as we eat and rest these horses. I want to be over the border and away from here by morning. We ain't gonna stop just whenever you feel like it.
I can at least wait until dark.
Why? Anybody knows the Apache can see in the dark just like a cat.
There, you see? He's crazy and doped up and I'm not going out there with him. Besides, he won't keep his hands to himself.
Howell looked at Cherry with a trace of a smile.
Is that true, Joe? Could you offend this poor, defenseless lady?
She's a damn liar!
All right, settle down, Joe. Get yourself some grub, if you can eat. Soon as it turns dark, take her out there behind some mesquite brush. Any Apache shows up, tell him I said take her with him.
Sims managed to get around close to JT Priest.
What's it worth to you if we get you back on top of this thing? Will that get us cut in for part of the money?
What's going on, Sims?
Just be ready to take control when the time comes. You can do that, can't you, for $700,000?
Just watch me.
Darkness had fallen by the time the warmed jerky and coffee had been consumed and the fire had been rubbed out on the ground. Joe Cherry had not eaten, but rather sat off to himself, finishing the last of the brown cocaine powder.
And they say man was never meant to fly!
Knock it off, Joe! And keep quiet, just in case there are more Apache prowling around.
I'm ready to go now.
Oh, figures. Now that Joe couldn't take both hands and grab his own ass.
It's not his ass I'm worried about him grabbing. I told you I'm not going out there with him, not in the shape he's in.
You don't call the shots here, Kate McCorkle. Either you go with Joe, or you cross your legs till we hit the border. Get over here, Joe. Take her out there like I told you to.
Sims, Priest, and Macklenburg watched as Kate and Joe Cherry walked away through the brush to the other side of the shallow creek bed.
So, Howell, do you really intend to share part of that money with Joe Cherry, the way he's acting? What's he done to deserve any of it?
All Joe has to do is be here. He might be doped and half crazy, but he's a real devil with a pistol. Ask Priest here.
I've seen better.
Yeah, I bet, but not lately.
They stood in silence for a few minutes. Denton Howe shooting a wary glance now and then toward the darkness across the thin creek bed.
Shouldn't they be back by now?
Yeah, they should.
In the brush on the other side of the creek, Kate McCorkle finished wiping her razor on Joe Cherry's shirt sleeve, then closed the razor and put it back up under her arm. She wiped her cuffed hands on a stand of stiff, coarse leaves and walked back toward the creek bed.
Is that you, Joe?
No, it's me. Joe's dead.
He's what? Dead?
Yes, I killed him. I tried to tell you he wouldn't keep his hands to himself.
Joe! If he doesn't answer, there'll be a killing here.
If he does answer, there'll be a miracle here.
Joe, boy! Can you hear me?
Forget it, Howell. He's dead.
I don't believe it. I'm going to check on him.
Howell turned wide-eyed toward Priest and Macklenburg, seeing the pistols in their hands.
Go see if you need to, Howell. Only leave the pistol here. Don't want you stumbling around out there, maybe shooting yourself in the foot.
Listen to me, Priest. Me and Cherry didn't do you this way. We came in and caught you red-handed running out on everybody. We didn't take your pistol, did we?
No, but some folks are more tolerant than others. Now lift it on your finger and drop it. It's better this way, Denton. How would you have managed it? Staying up all night? Wondering when one of us was going to come slipping up on you? Go on and drop it. We'll take you up the trail and send you on your way.
Like hell I'll drop it. You'll only get it if you pry it from my hand.
I understand.
Oh! Howell dropped.
Step back away from his pistol, Kate. This doesn't change anything between us.
After her getting rid of Cherry? After me warning you, helping you to get the drop on Howell, this doesn't mean anything?
Not a damn thing, Sims. This is about big money. In a dog-eat-dog world, I'm proud to say I'm the hungriest dog of all.
Well, let's all try to remember that from now on.
Sims looked at Rance Macklenburg, seeing the strange look come upon his face at the sound of his words.
See what he's trying to do, Mac? He wants to plant a seed of doubt in your mind, make you start thinking I'm out to double-cross you.
Yeah, the way you done all the others.
Can't you see the difference, Mac? You and I are in this thing together. There's no room for mistrust between us. Don't let this grifter make you think otherwise.
I won't.
Bob Hearns looked around the campsite as shadows stretched long out of the western sky. As if through a wavering gray veil, he saw the faces of grim men with long black hair who wore bandanas tied around their foreheads. Only when one of the men stood barefoot in front of him and took him by his hair and lifted his head, did Bob Hearns realize that these men were Apache warriors. Hearns felt his shirt ripped open.
What?
Medicine. Something wet and hot settled heavily on his chest. Though he tried to remain conscious, the darkness closed around him once more. When Hearns regained consciousness again, it was morning. He looked around and noticed that he was once again surrounded by a group of dark-skinned figures.
Americano, see?
See, Americano.
Who has done this to you? Who has attended to your wounds and kept you alive?
A hand patted Hearns' chest. Hearns focused on the face for a second, seeing it more clearly. Then he looked down at the dried and flaking mud on his chest.
No.
I will tell you who did this. Victorious warriors. That is who.
But why?
That is what we would like to know.
I can't tell you.
Looking past the man's face, he noticed for the first time that the men wore dusty black boots and Federale uniforms.
There was another man with me. Is he dead?
Dead? That one? That one is even more lucky than you. And believe me, you are both very lucky. Victorio does not do this sort of thing for anyone. He is one savage Apache, that Victorio. But your amigo? See, he too is alive. So is the young abogado, the attorney.
Good. Thank God. My amigo, can I see him?
He is still unconscious. He cannot hear you. He has lost very much blood. Do you wish to speak to the attorney? We will bring him to you.
No. That can wait.
Good, because he is very much frightened and makes little sense.
The captain gestured a gloved hand toward the broad, dark stain on the dirt surrounding Hearns.
You rest now. We are taking you to Sonora. But when you have regained your strength, there is much for you to explain. Your amigo carries a United States Federal Marshal's badge in his pocket. Is it so? He is a lawman?
See, he rides for Judge Charles Isaac Parker out of Fort Smith. We fought Los Pistoleros here and killed them all.
Los Pistoleros? Just the two of you? You killed that whole gang of desperados?
See, we killed them all.
There is reward money for some of those men.
Yeah, me and my friend will be claiming it.
I do not think so. I do not care that he rides for the hanging judge. He has no business coming here. We are the law in Mexico. If there is money coming, my government will claim it. But enough for now. We will talk later. You must rest and regain your strength.
You son of a bitch.
Hearns once again sank into darkness. Quick Charlie had noticed that ever since they'd stopped and had coffee before crossing the border and heading across Texas, Rance Mecklenburg had turned jumpier than a squirrel. He'd even taken to carrying his pistol across his lap. From the look Sims had been noticing in J.T. Priest's eyes, Mecklenburg's fears were well-founded. Both men were ready to throw down on one another at the slightest provocation. Sims liked that. He knew it bettered his and Kate's chances at staying alive. Although, as things now stood, Sims was less and less worried about his and Kate's safety, so long as Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth showed up before J.T. Priest saw that the big safe had not been opened, but rather was still stuck down in the earth as he left it. Sims and Kate would be all right. All that bothered Sims now was the fact that he'd seen no sign of Hart and Roth. They should have been somewhere on the trail where he'd left them, but they weren't. He began looking around with growing concern. Moving the tired horse along at a walk, Sims' thoughts were interrupted by J.T. Priest.
Mac, we'll be at the Birdine Spread another hour or so. It might be wise for you to stay back and keep an eye on our trail. Make sure nobody else comes up on us unexpected.
So, is this how you're planning on doing it? You leave me behind, just pick up the money and cut out, eh?
No, Mecklenburg, there's more to it than that. He'll make sure he kills Kate and me before he leaves the Burdeen Spread. But just to make sure there's no one who can put you on his trail afterward.
Shut up, Sims!
Let him talk, priest! What's the matter? Can't you stand and know people are on to you? Sounds like he knows you pretty well.
Mac, get a grip on yourself! What the hell's wrong with you? Me and you are partners. I'll see to it you get everything coming to you.
Sure you will! Same as you've done every other poor son of a bitch who's ever sided with you. I'm YSCU, Mr. J.T. Tuck Priest.
Jesus, Mac!
Don't call me Mac, you sneaky bastard! I'm seeing you for what you are! You're not gonna do me in, not without a fight!
J.T. Priest flung himself from the saddle, seeing the cocked pistol come up from across Mecklenburg's lap. Priest rolled across the ground, snatching up both pistols from his wallet. Sims jerked his horse back and out of the way and jumped to the ground, pulling Kate McCorkle down with him. Priest fired.
Oh, dang it!
Mecklenburg came down from his saddle, a streak of blood across his shoulder. Mecklenburg fell backward, but struggled up onto his knees, his pistol dangling loose in his trigger finger.
Drop it, Mac!
You dirty rotten...
Lord God Almighty, what got into him?
I don't know.
Sims got to his feet, helping Kate up beside him.
Don't act innocent, you damn grifter! You caused this! I saw how you kept egging him on.
For 2 cents, you'd kill him? But for $700,000, you won't.
Keep pushing, Sims. See, if I don't reach a point, I'll say to hell with the money.
Come on, priest. I didn't cause that. Sure, I was playing the two of you against one another a little, but my God, he lost his mind. You can't blame me.
If there was ever any chance of me cutting you two in for part of that money, you just blew it, Sims.
Yeah? Don't make threats now, JT. There's just you here. No gang of outlaws to put between you and...
Shut up, both of you!
Bring that horse over here and toss me the reins. Don't neither of you get any ideas about making a run for it.
Easy, JT.
After pitching him a canteen and a couple of dusty bandanas, Kate sat down on her haunches beside Sims in the dirt and watched Priest tend to his wounds from 15 feet away. Priest tore the bandanas with his teeth and fashioned a crude bandage for his upper arm, his shoulder, and his forearm, where he'd been grazed in the short, brutal gunfight with Mecklenburg. All the while, he kept the reins to both Mecklenburg's horse and the one Sims and Kate had been riding, clamped to the ground beneath his boot. The horse Priest had been riding walked in a wide circle, limping from a bullet graze on its leg.
Priest, let me drop that saddle and set that horse loose. He'll be all right in a couple of days. Let him hook up with some wild horses out here somewhere.
To hell with him!
I'm gonna do it anyway. If you kill me for that, you don't deserve the money.
Priest raised the pistol towards Sims, watching him as he sidestepped over to the horse, then slowly turned and dropped the saddle from its back and the bit from its mouth. He slapped the wounded horse and watched it limp away at a stiff trot.
There now. It didn't hurt you a bit, JT.
Damn a bunch of lame horses.
I hoped he'd let me close enough to him to do us some good.
Kate's eyes flickered down toward the razor under her arm.
No, Kate, we got this far. Let's play it on out.
But why?
Because I made Sullivan Hart a promise. I aim to keep it. I didn't intend for things to get so out of hand with Mecklenburg a while ago. Just wanted to keep both of them on edge.
I hate to break this to you, but it wasn't your antagonizing that caused Rance Mecklenburg to go nuts on us.
Sure it was, Kate. You saw how nervous and jumpy he was getting all day.
Yeah, I saw. But it was because I took the leather bag from around Joe Cherry's neck when I killed him and then dumped it into Mecklenburg's coffee cup.
You did that?
You're damn right I did. I don't know what kind of promise you made, Sullivan Hart, but I made some promises of my own. To myself. Nobody drags me out into this furnace against my will, handcuffs me, makes me have to kill some poor dope-snorting flunky like Joe Cherry. The next time I get within cutting distance of JT Priest, he is mine. All mine.
Two Jack Roth lowered the telescope from his eye and handed it back to Sullivan Hart.
I say we ride down there right now and finish this thing. You know Sims must be worried, wondering why we haven't showed up already.
A few feet to Roth's left, the prisoner, Leonard Hergo, sat on his horse with his hands cuffed, his head bowed beneath his hat brim.
I know. But I want to see J.T. Priest standing beside that safe when he looks me in the eye. I only wish the door was open with a ton of money falling out of it when I step up to him and put him out of business.
For your father's sake?
No. It's not for my father's sake anymore. Started out to be, but it's not anymore. After seeing the way J.T. Priest has done, the way he's spit in the law's face, broken every rule of decency, then managed to waltz away from justice, laughing about it, now my father's death has nothing to do with it anymore. I'd kill J.T. Priest now, even if my father was still alive.
I understand. Think Sims has gotten this far and managed never to fire a shot the way he said he would?
I wouldn't be surprised. Sims does have his ways.
Leonard Hergo smiled grimly.
Well, one thing's for certain. He hadn't been hard to track. All you had to do was watch for the buzzards and follow the bodies.
Come on. Let's make sure we're waiting there when they arrive.
When they rode onto the Burdeen spread, they kept to the far side of the front yard and rode along the fence to keep from leaving fresh hoof prints on the path to the empty house. At one point, the fence had been broken and pulled to one side, and where once cattle had grazed in the sparse pale grass along the endless stretch of flatland, now only the bodies of a few suckling calves lay dead where rustlers had shot them before driving the cattle out and off into the night.
Cattle thieves wasted no time, did they?
Good cattle thief can't afford to waste time. It's kind of business where every minute counts. You have to get them beeves somewhere and get them cross-branded. Then you have to get them somewhere to where nobody
Hergo's words stopped short as he looked around and saw the way the two deputies sat staring at him.
Not that I ever stole any cattle myself, you understand. But I've heard lots of things along the way.
Sure you have.
Well, it's the truth. I never sold any cattle.
Of course not. Same as you had nothing to do with robbing that stage and killing the driver.
Boy, if there was a Bible here, I'd slap my hand to it. I didn't hook up with Priest's bunch till after they robbed that stagecoach. Fact is, I've been a law-abiding man my whole damn life. Now, I'll just be honest with you. I did do what you might call some minor thieving back after the war. But only because there was no work to be had.
Well, you'll be plenty busy for the next few years, provided the judge doesn't hang you.
Hang me, hell! I told you I never had nothing to do with it. Even if I did, which I didn't. Where's there any proof?
There's a couple of cowboys who can identify anybody who was there.
I'm glad to hear that. Because if they can say who was there, they can damn sure tell you I wasn't. So that'll just about save my bacon. I'll be free to pursue my career.
Oh? What career is that?
Promise not to laugh.
We'll do our best.
I've been lately feeling drawn to law work. The same as you two boys. I just haven't found a way to get my foot in the door.
Sullivan Hart led his horse into a cover of brush and spun his reins around a short, dry sapling.
Maybe you need to talk to the judge. Parker's always looking for good men. Even overlooks a few blemishes on a man's criminal record so long as it's not too bad.
Is that a fact?
Yeah, but killing a stagecoach driver is a hard one to overlook.
But if I'm not charged, or say if I'm found innocent, what do you suppose my chances would be?
Put it out of your mind, Hergo. Sit down and keep quiet till we get this thing finished.
You're not really gonna kill old J.T. Priest in cold blood, are you? Well, not that he ain't got it coming, you understand, but I can't rightly see how you can call yourselves lawmen doing something like that. If somebody like me shooting him, I can understand. But not if I was wearing a badge, no, sir.
Did you hear me tell you to keep quiet, Hergo?
While the deputies and their prisoner waited in the cover of brush behind the blown-out hull of a house, on the road out front, J.T. Priest rode a few feet behind Sims and Kate McCorkle, keeping a wary eye on both sides of the narrow entrance trail leading up into the Burdeen spread.
Hold it right there.
What's wrong, J.T.? We're here now. Let's go spin that baby and get it over with.
Something feels wrong here, Sims. I feel like I'm walking into a trap.
No? Well, that's a chance you'll have to take, J.T. There could be law waiting anywhere up ahead. You'd rather stop here and forget all about it? Where's your sport and blood?
Go on, Sims. Just remember, I've got you in my gun sights. Anything goes wrong, you and Kate are the first to fall. I don't care if there is somebody waiting. There's already blood on that money, and a little more won't hurt a thing.
Now don't worry, JT. Your biggest enemies here are the ghosts of all the men you've killed.
They rode on slowly, Sims stepping his horse wide to the sun-dried remnants of hide and bone, of boot wells chewed through by coyotes, and a vertebrae picked clean by buzzards and ants. When they had passed the charred hull of the house and rode on toward the pile of brush Sims had used to cover the large safe, J.T. Priest moved his horse up beside Sims, with his pistol pointed at him. When they were a few feet from the safe, Priest couldn't hold himself back any longer. He dropped down from his horse, letting the reins fall to the ground, and he ran forward, shoving his pistol down in his waist, paying no regard at all to Sims and Kate for the moment.
Come to Daddy!
He began throwing the brush aside.
Come on, Sims! Get it spun! Let the big door open!
Poor fool. We could ride away and leave him standing there. He won't even notice.
But they will.
Rothenhart stepped out of the brush 10 feet to Priest's right. Priest didn't even see the lawman. He turned and looked at Sims, a wide grin on his face.
Come on, Sims, get moving! Let's get this done and get out of here.
Don't you see anything wrong, JT?
Priest looked puzzled, still not noticing Hart and Roth as they stepped closer.
Wrong? What?
Priest looked at Sims, then at Kate, then back to the safe, kicking the last piece of brush away from the door. He froze for a second as he stared at the safe.
Now he sees it.
To Priest's right, Sullivan Hart stopped and spread his feet a shoulder width apart, pulling his riding duster back behind his holster.
Sims! You lying snake! You didn't open it before! It's still upside down, still stuck in the dirt!
I didn't open it because it won't open, you idiot. Don't you know what that safe is? It's a dummy. The railroad had it built as a decoy. It's nothing but slabs of steel forged together. That's why the big government dynamite couldn't blow it. The dial is just for appearance. Burdeen and Sergio never saw the inside of that safe, neither has anybody else.
I'll kill you!
Priest's words stopped, as did his gun hand, at the sight of Sullivan Hart standing 10 feet away, facing him.
You got the right idea, J.T. Priest. Now follow through.
Priest stood stone still, seeing Hart's gun hand poised and ready. Seeing how the big Indian Two Jack Roth had dropped over out of the way. Beside Roth stood Leonard Hergo in handcuffs. Priest clenched his teeth and swallowed a dry knot in his throat.
Hart, I'm not drawing on you. Watch now. I'm gonna take my hand away from this pistol, real slow and easy. I'm giving up. Everybody see that? Hergo, you see it, don't you?
I ain't seeing nothing today, JT. You sorry bastard. I just wish they could kill you more than once.
Makes no difference. I'm not resisting. I'm not drawing.
Priest, whether you draw or not, I'm gonna kill you when I count to three. One.
You can't do it, Hart! You're a lawman!
Two.
No, sir! You gotta take me back! Let a jury decide me! Hell, I haven't even broken a law! Ask Hergo! Me and him weren't even there when those boys robbed that stage. We only heard about it. Where's any witnesses? Anything I might have done was down in Mexico. You got nothing on me, Hart, for God's sake!
Three.
Hart's hand streaked up, his pistol cocked.
No!
Priest snatched his hand up away from his pistol and spread his fingers wide. Hart hesitated, trying hard to force himself to drop the hammer and put an end to J.T. Priest forever. His gun trembled in his hand, but he couldn't do it. Not like this.
Draw, Priest! Damn you, draw!
Not today, Hart! Look at you! You thought you could, but by God, you couldn't! I just beat you again, Hart! The next thing you know, I'll be getting out free and clear, and the rest of...
Hergo had snatched Roth's pistol from its holster. He held the gun in his cuffed hands. Hergo dropped Roth's pistol as if it were a rattler and spread his cuffed hands in front of his face. J.T. Priest lay dead in the dirt. Leonard Hergo nodded at Priest's body.
Stupid son of a bitch just got on my nerves. I wanted to kill him the last time we was here, acting like he knew so much.
Sims, Kate McCorkle, Hart, and Roth stood stunned into silence. A hot breeze whipped in and licked at their collars, hat brims, and duster tails. Sims looked down at Priest's bullet-riddled body.
I brought him here for you, Hart. You still owe me one.
I know.
Roth took 5 cartridges from his belt, reloaded his pistol, and spun it into his holster.
What you just did was murder.
No, it wasn't. He went for that pistol. Y'all just wasn't paying attention.
Roth and Hart looked at each other as Sims and Kate McCorkle stepped in closer.
Did you see him go for the pistol, Sully?
Hart didn't answer.
Well, if none of you saw it, it's a good thing I did. I saw it in his eyes. He was right on the verge.
Sullivan Hart lowered his pistol back into his holster.
All I know is J.T. Priest is dead. Hergo never missed a shot.
I never meant to miss a shot. You all did hear him say I had nothing to do with that stagecoach, didn't you?
We heard him say it, Hergo. J.T. Priest's word isn't worth much as the law goes.
It's better than none. Just remember he said it if anybody asks.
Sims, didn't you tell us before that you didn't know this man?
That's right. I never saw Hergo before in my life.
Yet you're the man who knows all the outlaws, aren't you?
Yes, but Hergo here is a new one on me.
I already told you I'm no outlaw. Not really. Although I admit I was coming pretty close, getting to throw in with Los Pistoleros. Like I told yous, I ran into hard times after the war. Lost my place. My wife left me for a gamecock fighter.
Easy, Hergo. Keep quiet for a minute. Trying to see if we can do you some good here.
Yes, sir. You go right on ahead. I won't interrupt you.
As Sims, Hart, and Roth drew to one side and huddled in a discussion, Kate McCorkle looked Leonard Hergo up and down.
A gamecock fighter?
What can I tell you? You know how women are.
That night, when they had ridden a full 20 miles or more from the deserted Birdeen spread and made camp alongside a stream reaching down from the north, Kate McCorkle bathed herself and lay soaking for nearly an hour. She rubbed her chafed wrist, stretched her arms out, and gazed up at the darkening sky until Sims walked to the side of the stream and held a blanket out for her to wrap around herself. Sims smiled, watching her pat herself dry.
So, what do you think's going on with Jake Cope by now?
Oh, by now, him and that Pinkerton man are probably halfway to Fort Smith. Why? Are you still thinking about him a lot? Should I be jealous?
Oh, a little jealous would be nice. But no, I was just curious.
Well, Coke turned out to be no less than I expected. He's no longer the new man. After this, he'll be one of us.
Oh, isn't that big of you? And what about this Leonard Hergo? Is he gonna be the new man now?
If Hart can help him out with Parker, yeah, I believe he just might. Wouldn't be the first time Parker hired somebody with a checkered past. Look at me.
Yes, but Hergo? He's lying faster than a cat can scratch its behind. If you ask me, he probably was on the stage robbery. He might not have done anything, but he was there.
But it wasn't actually a robbery. As far as him being there, we'll never know about that one. But then we'll never know for sure if Priest was really going for his pistol or not. If he was, Hergo might have saved somebody's life.
You know J.T. Priest wasn't going for his pistol, Charlie, and so do I.
All I know is Parker always needs good lawmen. Maybe sometime you run into a man like Hergo, catch him before he turns into a full-blown life of crime. Maybe it turns out good for everybody concerned. Did you enjoy your bath?
Yes, thank you. Charlie, why do you make such a promise to Hart? Telling him you'd bring J.T. Priest to him.
Well, I knew it would take some time to come find you. I needed something to occupy my mind.
God, Charlie. What am I going to do with you?
Another week would pass before Quick Charlie Sims, Kate McCorkle, Two Jack Roth, and Sullivan Hart had settled back into day-to-day life in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Upon returning, Hart, Roth, and Sims had told Judge Parker all that had happened before sitting down to file their official report on it. When the three had finished, Parker only looked back and forth, studying each man's eyes in turn. He could tell things might not have happened exactly the way they said, but he was satisfied with their story. It wasn't quite clear to Judge Parker exactly how the deputies had come upon the new man, Leonard Hergo, or how in the mix of things, Hergo had shot J.T. Priest 6 times when Priest almost managed to get the drop on all 3 deputies. All 3? That was hard to swallow.
The main thing is, we're through with Priest and Los Pistoleros once and for all. Am I safe in saying so?
The 3 deputies looked at one another as if deciding who should answer. Finally, it was Sims who spoke up.
Yes, Your Honor. We feel confident that once Jake Coke returns, Los Pistoleros will have been put out of business.
If he returns. I can't imagine what's keeping him so long. You don't suppose he's...
No, sir, Your Honor. I'm confident he and the Pinkerton man are both just fine. Probably coming back the long way, talking over old times.
Yeah, hopefully, that's all it is. What are the odds of him running into a former student of his out there?
That's remarkable, all right.
Well, Coke has some good news awaiting him here. Deputy Slater has informed me that there are rewards totaling $6,000 on 4 of the men he brought in before leaving town. That should make him a little happier about what a U.S. Deputy Marshal can make.
Yes, sir, Your Honor, I'm certain it will.
Well, gentlemen, if there's nothing further to discuss, I look forward to your written reports. Good work, men.
But 5 days passed, and still there was not a sign of Jake Coke, nor had there been any word from him. Out front of the Red Bull Saloon, Sim stood chewing on a toothpick, watching Hart, Roth, and Hergo walk toward him from the telegraph office. Since their return, Leonard Hergo had taken on a change of new clothes, complete with a pair of shiny black boots, a shave, and a close-cropped haircut. He wore a battered tin star the judge had pinned on him the day before. As they drew near, Sims took the toothpick from between his teeth.
Still nothing?
Behind him stood Kate McCorkle in her new green satin dress and white lace gloves, a fashionable parasol propped over her shoulder.
Not a word. You don't think he'd just up and quit, do you?
No, not without first collecting what's due him. You heard the judge, $6,000? Nobody turns down that kind of money, especially a bounty hunter like Coke.
Yeah, you're right. He'll be back. After all, he's one of us now.
But standing there, the 4 deputies all looked out across the western sky. as if the answer to Jake Koch's whereabouts lay somewhere in the soft, distant clouds above Mexico.
I wouldn't be too sure. Take care of yourself, Jake.
Kate joined the deputies in their search of the wild blue heavens. Jake Koch and Bob Hearn sat atop their horses and watched R. Martin Swan ride down from the ridge and soon disappear along the winding trail toward the border.
That was quite a story he told, wasn't it? About priests giving him a gun with one bullet in it. Said, invest it wisely.
Yep, quite a story. But Swan wasn't as scared or as pliable as priests thought he was. Told me he'd made up his mind once he got that powder out of his system. He was gonna sober up and put that one bullet through J.T. Priest's head. Said that would be the best investment he could think of.
Think he would've?
We'll never know. Neither will he, fortunately. All I know is Swan will sure have something to tell his grandkids someday. Of course, he won't tell all of it. Not the way it actually happened. No, come to think of it, he'll never mention it at all.
That's what I figure.
Bob Hearns turned his horse in beside Koch, and together they nudged the animals into a slow walk.
You sure about this, Jake?
I said I was, didn't I? Are you sure about it, Bob?
Can't say I was ever crazy about the cattle business, but yep, we can give it a try. I wouldn't quit Alan Pinkerton in the midst of a job, but now that that's over, I'm ready to go on to something else. I'd feel better if we had a little more startup money. Can't believe the Federalists are going to send somebody over to claim the bounties.
It's their country. They can do what they want them.
I got no pay coming from Pinkerton's. You have anything coming from Parker?
I got a half month's pay waiting in Fort Smith, but it's hardly worth the trip there. Don't worry, though. We'll make out. And besides, I don't feel like facing Sims and the others. Nothing against them, but they're not my kind of folks. And law work ain't my kind of business. Don't know what it is about me, but ever since I left teaching school, seems like I do something for a while and soon tire of it. Sounds crazy, I guess.
Not to me, it doesn't. I'm the same way. Cattle, huh? Think there's any real money in it?
I met an old boy last year who came out from Kentucky after the war. Said he'd lost money at everything he'd ever done, but he'd lost less money droving cattle than anything else.
That must be the right business, then. Not the woman, is it? Reason you don't want to go to Fort Smith and pick up your pay?
Koch stopped his horse, turned in his saddle, and looked down to the dog limping along behind him.
Get up here, Buster. Looks like you could use a ride.
The dog came forward stiffly, a thick bandage wrapped around its ribs. He bounded upward and Koch caught him by the nape of his neck and pulled him up across his lap.
Oh, you better take it easy now, boy. Pace you live at, I worry about you sometimes.
The dog lay across Koch's lap, looking up at him, cocking his head sideways as if he was trying to understand.
Well, is it?
What?
The woman. She the reason you don't want to go to Fort Smith.
Koch nudged his dapple gray forward, one hand on the dog's head, rubbing it with his gloved hand. He gazed east across the sky and smiled to himself.
What woman?
The Dead or Alive Trilogy, Book 3, Blood Money, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2002 by Ralph Cotton. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Ralph Cotton. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Michael Glenn, Alyssa Willman, Michael John Casey, Tim Getman, Patrick Busick, Richard Rowan, Christopher Sheeran, Thomas Keegan, Stephen Carpenter, James Konacek, Christopher Graybill, Terence Aselford, Gary Tells, Danny Gavigan, James Lewis, Johan Detweiler, Joe Brack, Dylan Lynch, Scott McCormick, Evan Casey, Thomas Penny, Drew Copas, Alexander Strain, Yasmin Toison, Nanette Savard, and Gregory Gorton. Additional Boot Hill Gang by The Dead Giveaway. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Allison Thomas. Additional music and book adaptation by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Blood Money, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to get William W. Johnstone's Mountain Man series and Cotton Pickens series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers and Ralph Compton's Trail of the Gunfighters, all available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere, or at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pumps titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We sure appreciate it.
The warded man stalks the night, slaying demons with the newly discovered wards of power. But now, a new threat is rising. An old friend, now a bitter enemy. And he has in his possession a weapon that could unite all humanity, or tear it to pieces. The Desert Spear. Witness the rise of Amon Jardir in the Demon Cycle, Book 2, The Desert Spear. Available now in graphic audio.
Now we can invade the Greenlands.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.